हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहद्वैतगराधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 88. In this regard, Sri Krishna instructs in the Bhagavad Gita, in this way, you'll be freed from bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me, in this principle of renunciation, you'll be liberated and come to me. Bhagavad Gita 9:28. Furthermore, Sri Krishna says, those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. 2:41. Srila Prabhupada comments in Bhagavad Gita 2:41. When one is engaged in the duties of Krishna consciousness, he need not act in relationship to the material world with obligations to family, traditions, humanity, or nationality. Fruitive activities are the engagement of one's reaction from past good and bad deeds. When one is awake in Krishna consciousness, he need no longer endeavor for good results in his activities. When one is situated in Krishna consciousness, all activities are on the absolute plane, for they are no longer subject to dualities like good and bad. Right? So this is a very, very important point, because many times we will work, yes, give up things that are inauspicious, that get rid of bad results. When we say, oh, how can we get rid of karma? We mean bad, we don't mean good. But the devotee gets rid of both. He's not interested in either good or bad. Right? That's the whole thing, because both of them will keep you to the material world. So, when you do things to please Krishna, it's on the absolute platform. So you're not doing it because it's obligations to family, traditions, humanity, nationality. You're doing it because those are the duties within Krishna consciousness. So you're simply doing things to please Krishna, nothing else. Does that make sense? So you're not worried about what material result you'll get. You're worried about pleasing Krishna. So you're going to do the activity to the best that you can and then see how that works. Does that make sense? The highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is renunciation of the material conception of life. This state is automatically achieved by progressive Krishna consciousness, right? So by progressive, it'll naturally move forward. Just as we saw is that by accepting things not connected to Krishna, we've developed material consciousness and come here. So by giving up the material concept of life, that will situate one again on the spiritual platform. But how is that done? It's because of adding Krishna into it. This idea is that I'm going to get liberated by not adding Krishna, just by acting in naishkarmya or detachment or all these other aspects. The only problem with them is that how will they actually work? So if you're not adding Krishna as the center, you are not actually functioning on the spiritual platform. Does that make sense? It's kind of like the spiritual platform, but the spiritual platform is Sat, Chit, and Ananda. So if you're only including Sat, then where's the Chit and Ananda? Right? And the soul being Chit and Ananda, you're not addressing that. So how is the soul liberated? So the soul is only actually liberated when you're dealing with all three. That's done with in devotion to Krishna, the person. Does that make sense? So that's why it says the highest perfection. Right? That doesn't mean the highest level. It's the highest perfection. Right? What is the meaning here? Perfection is always used in term of coming to the liberated platform. So whenever you see Prabhupada use the word perfection, it means liberation. Right? So the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, renunciation of the material concept of life, that will bring you then to the actual liberated platform, Brahma Bhuta. Then, by devotion to Krishna, that will take you on to prema and beyond. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's what it should be called, bhava, prema, and beyond, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the highest perfection? If perfection is liberation, highest perfection is what?
Is the liberated part. Because you see renunciation of the material concept of life.
Okay, that's the liberation.
Yes. But you see, as the word perfection is used.
Yeah, it says highest perfection.
Means it's in Krishna, it's Brahma Bhuta, so within Krishna consciousness. Okay. The others attain perfection.
So that's mukti.
Yeah, that's mukti. So then this is Brahma Bhuta. Because you're giving up so that degree you give up seeing things separate from Krishna. When I see the secondary not connected to Krishna, right? I just see it on its own. That's material. And then seeing it in connection to Krishna, that's spiritual. Right? And seeing it for Krishna's pleasure and all that, that's pure devotional service. So we're trying to get to that platform. So it's just automatic that the material conception has to be given up. We take it as that, material activities, meaning the external activities I do. So we'll take material activities to be giving up external activities. But that's not actually what we're talking about. Does that make sense? Because that's where the mistake is made. I've given up the external activity, now it's spiritual. No. Until whatever position you're accepting is connected to Krishna, it's not spiritual. It's material. Just a different form of material. Because attachment and renunciation are the two sides of the coin. Or what is it? Attachment and repulsion. They're the two sides of the same coin. They're both materialism. Just, very different flavors. Right? So it has to be connected to Krishna. That's the whole point. So in doing that, then one has one has to give up all concepts of enjoyment separate from Krishna. So that's why good and bad karma are given up. Right? It's devotional service. That's why we do it. So that's why you see the problems that we were having before, based on these upadis, right? Then the soul is identifying with the body, and whatever is the nature of that body, that conditioned nature, then we're seeing the world through that vision. That will be a material vision. Like when the soul identifies with that, then the vision using that will be material. One has to identify as a servant of Krishna. Right, I'm not the body is not enough, because I can still be not the body but not be a devotee of Krishna. Does that make sense? If we're seeing ourselves in connection with Krishna, just saying I'm not the body works. But if we're coming up with some other angle on that identity, then it will be I'm not the body, but I think I'm my how you say. My feelings, my thoughts, my feelings, all these different aspects. I'm this. I don't like this. So if I say I'm not the body, then I can shift it from the external form into what I feel like doing. Right? And then because we think about it, we think it's happened. Right? It's also a point of niti. If by discussing it or thinking about it, now you think it's accomplished, that's foolish. No, you actually have to make the endeavor. So here, if someone's situated in Krishna consciousness, engaged in the duties of Krishna consciousness, he's not on the material platform. That's the main point. So if one will just situate yourself in Krishna consciousness because it's pleasing to Krishna, that's transcendental. Even if you're doing it because you're supposed to do it, it's still transcendental. So that's the point. So it's not about good work, bad work, all these things. Hamsavatar continued. Those states of existence that are conceived of as separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead have no actual existence, although they create a sense of separation from the absolute truth. It means there's no actual existence in the material consciousness. But because of that, then... Footnote 27. O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.34. But it appears to be in darkness because of the avidya potency. We think it's in darkness, it's separate from the Lord. But actually it's just what Krishna's potency. So it's all in connection with the Lord. So it's actually in light. But we're perceiving it in darkness. So we're perceiving that difference between material and the Lord. Does that make sense? So the point is that you have the external energy is not separate from the Lord. But when we see, so if you see the external energy in connection with the Lord, then you're on the transcendental platform. Right? But when you see the energy of the Lord as separate from Him, then you're on the material platform. Does that make sense? So the same platform, the same situation, you can call it spiritual and material. This is where the confusion comes in. Because we take it as one or the other. Hello, sir. Haribal, Haribal.
And the energy itself, the material energy, spiritual energy, we cannot say that they're in darkness.
The material energy. No, that's why it says it appears to be in darkness. We see it that way.
But she's all right.
She's fine. She's fully Krishna conscious. She's a devotee of Krishna. You know, there's that pastime, I think, where Maya then comes before Radha and Krishna, and in a very embarrassed way, then says that, you know, I'm going to now carry out the duties of material creation. Like that. Because she feels embarrassed that all these living entities, but under her influence, are being kept, you know, in darkness about Krishna consciousness. But that's because they don't want. She's simply fulfilling their desires under Krishna's direction. Then, having done that, when it's, what, you know, how you say, when you come to the platform of been there, done that, then you can take up Krishna consciousness. Right? Because the thing is you've heard, you have the association, you have all that. And if that goes, then it works fine. But if not, then okay, then go through it. And then you'll see. It doesn't work. You can try, because how do you do it without? Hence vodka. Because there's no butter on the bread. So if you have butter on the bread, you don't need the vodka, right? Yes. It improves, right?
When you connect the material energy, you're thinking it as, you know, potency of Krishna.
Right.
It's spiritual, and then when you do not connect, then it becomes material. So can
no, it acts on us as material. It's always the external potency of the Lord, but it's just another potency of Krishna. It's one of the major, because of the potencies, there's internal, external, and marginal. These are the three main potencies, like that. So you'll have unlimited, but there'll be breakdowns of these. Like you saw that those previous verses, Prabhupada was giving, you know, Sanskrit definitions of these, and he was using much bigger phrases of what exact Shakti they are. No? No one remembers that one? He's talking about the different Shaktis, and the Jiva being the Shakti, and then the illusory energy, and he mentions specific Shaktis. Okay. Oh. we lost the ones before.
We have it. It's inside.
Oh, I see. I was taking it really from there. Okay. Kshetragya Shakti and Avidya Karma is Samgya. Right, so you're getting different aspects of the potency. So within the marginal, then you're getting the Kshetragya Shakti. Like, you know, so it means where they think that they are the, you know, the observers and the Lord and Master of the body. So that's that Shakti. So all these different things are going on.
Yes, so can you say that then? When the devotees, you know, switch from connecting to Krishna and not connecting to Krishna, there's a momentary perception of both as they connect and don't connect.
Generally, if you're not connecting, you don't perceive the connecting. Means you can think back and contemplate those two. But at the time when you're operating, if you're not thinking of Krishna, you're not thinking of Krishna. Right? Isn't that how the ad goes? If you're not thinking of Krishna, you're not thinking of Krishna. Right? Right? So that's the way it is. But afterwards you can think about the experience of not thinking of Krishna and the experience of being absorbed in Krishna and compare the two. That's then where the recollection has some value. Right? Then you can see the difference. So then you're convinced, but because of habit, then you keep going the other. But you keep doing this contemplation. That's why manana, that practice, means you do it for a long time. It doesn't say just one time and hari bol. You know, this is not Hollywood. You know, it takes a little bit more. Like, you know, the guy can't walk up upstairs without tripping. And then, you know, but then with, you know, how you say, a 30-second montage, then the guy now is like, you know, a superhero. Right? You know, so it's like, what do you call it? The South Tarantica Buddhists or something like that. That just by thinking and imagining that it all happens. Yeah? No? Yes. Hamsavakar, okay. Just as the seer of it. So the point is, if it's not in relation to Krishna, it's not reality. Not that what you're seeing is not reality, but your perception of it, that's not real. Even though it's still a potency of Krishna that allows you to see like that. But how you perceive it and the effect it will have on you, you'll get no real value to it. Does that make sense? Because value is seeing things in connection with Krishna and functioning in that capacity. If you function outside of that, that doesn't have any value for the jiva. We always have to remember, Maya is not in Maya. We are. Right? Just like the prison warden is not in the prison. They're not a prisoner. They may be situated there, but they're not a prisoner. Just as the seer of a dream imagines many different activities and rewards, similarly, because of the sense of an existence separate from the Lord's existence, the living entity falsely performs fruit of activities, thinking them to be the cause of future rewards and destinations. Right? So you see, it's all going on in this imagination aspect. That's why you say mental speculation. Right? We use it a lot, mental speculation, so it doesn't just apply to intellectuals. Right? All they have is mental speculation. Right? And they speculate on various ways to speculate to get better speculation so that their experience of speculation increases. Does that make sense? While the karmis, they speculate to come up with a plan of something to actually execute to get a result, and then they're supposed to enjoy that. And then when they don't, they come up with a new speculation, well, maybe if I adjust it. Okay, we went to the Riviera, it wasn't that great. Well, maybe that's because it's the Italian Riviera. If we'd gone to the French Riviera, then it would have been so much better. Right? No? Like that. And if that doesn't work, well, maybe the Bahamas, that doesn't work, we'll try Hawaii. If that doesn't work, then kind of run out of options. Like, because all those ones in the, what do you call it, you see in the pictures of that pure white sands and the trees and the turquoise water, and there's no living entity there. There's a reason there's no living entity there, because in those waters are piranhas. Like that. Literally. So, yeah, so it's not as good as it looks. So then we imagine all this to happen. Well, if you do this in connection with Krishna, you actually get spiritual benefit. Does that make sense? Well, in Turkey, they have great beaches also? Or yeah, okay. So one more option. So they take anything around the northern part of the Mediterranean, northern and eastern. Okay. As you go around the southern, a little too sandy.
We have rocks. Red Sea.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, our beach is all rocks. There's no sand. You know, where I grew up. Venice Beach, though, is better. But yeah. While awake, the living entity enjoys with all of his senses the fleeting characteristics of the material body and mind. While dreaming, he enjoys similar experiences within the mind. And in deep, dreamless sleep, all such experiences merge into ignorance. By remembering and contemplating the succession of wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep, the living entity can understand that he is one throughout the three stages of consciousness and is transcendental. Thus, he becomes the lord of the senses. Because if you contemplate, you are conscious at all these levels. And to be conscious of that means you have to be beyond these levels. So if one can always remember that, then one becomes you can control the senses. Right? But how do you always think like that? It's this point here that Krishna made to Brahma. That it's all him. That's the easiest. Right, because you're talking about, he's talking to transcendentalists here, the Hamsavatara, the four Kumaras. But for us, then yes, that transcendental thing is true, but the point is the actual, the easiest way to be there, situate yourself there, and is through Krishna consciousness. Because that's the point. They are on that platform, but they have to become Krishna conscious. Right? Okay. In this regard, Anantadev instructed Maharaj Chitraketu. When a person is in deep sleep, he dreams and sees in himself many other objects, such as great mountains and rivers, and perhaps even the entire universe. Although they are far away, sometimes when one awakens from a dream, he sees that he is in human form, lying in his bed in one place. Right? So if you wake up in the morning and you find out you're a very large bug or something, then you got a problem. You know, you expected to wake up as a human, but you end up as a bug. Then, I think you know you're in check somewhere, right? If that happens.
It proves momentary existence.
It proves momentary existence.
Mm.
Yeah, no, those guys were very momentary existence. Yeah. When he sees himself in terms of various conditions, as belonging to a particular nationality, family, and so on, all the conditions of deep sleep, dreaming, and wakefulness, then he sees himself in terms... Okay, so he has a dreaming state, deep sleep, the dreams, he wakes up, and he identifies with all these things, and so then... He just sees himself as all this part of national family, nationality, family, and everything like that. And then being in that condition, then he separates himself from the Lord. All the conditions of deep sleep, dreaming, and wakefulness are but energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should always remember the original creator of these conditions, the Supreme Lord, who is unaffected by them. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:16, 53-54. Right, so that's the point. You're trying to come to that platform. Huh. That's 64. And then continuing here. One should understand that the activities is still Anantadevta Chittaketu. One should understand that the activities of persons who are proud of their material experience bring only results contradictory to those such persons conceive while awake, sleeping, and deeply sleeping. Right? So, if you conceive of these things, you're proud of it, the results that you get are actually opposite of what you conceive. Does that make sense? Because the point is that material energy is Krishna's, the mind is Krishna's, and all these. So when you use pride, you're going against the actual nature of how you function in Krishna's energy, with Krishna's energy. So the results you get will never be what you expect. Right? Because you're going against what it's supposed to be. You're supposed to use the proper character and all that. So real proper character is devotional service. Does that make sense? So as these things get mixed, problems come up. So change the consciousness that it's all Krishna's energy, it's all about Krishna. Therefore, then, you avoid all this. Yes?
On this point of upadis, or mental speculation, what about upadis that are in relationship with the Lord, such as I belong to this religion, or I am a member of this particular group? Seems like a kind of a mixture of transcendental realization with material, consciousness at the same time. Could you say something on that?
No, but what are you equating that it's... What are you equating that makes it material? If we're identifying as a member of the Sankirtan movement, what aspect of that are you identifying as material?
I suppose place, time, circumstance in the material world,
Okay, but Krishna also at a particular time 5,000 years ago appeared and performed his manifest pastimes. So does that now become material by this definition?
No.
So then why, if we're identifying with something spiritual, do we have to consider it material? Simply because we can conceive of it or we can identify with it. Because we have to be very careful that we're not using the impersonalist concept that, anything that you can perceive of with the gross and subtle body, then, and activities thereof, those are material and they give pain. So if I want to be happy, I have to get rid of, avoid all the activities of pain. Therefore, I give up anything that is, I would say of this world, of this world is illusion. You understand? But if the material world is Krishna's energy, it belongs to Krishna, and what we're supposed to do is use it in Krishna's service, how is that an upadi? You know what I'm saying? Means there's a difference between doing the activities of a Brahman, because that's the conditioned nature, and you as a soul are serving Krishna by engaging that nature in Krishna's service, and identifying that I am a Brahman, and therefore there's pride. There's a difference. Otherwise, if we just take the words and all that, then all we're dealing with here is an argument to break down the acceptance of higher authority coming from the Vedic version, from the Parampara, and coming from the Vedic literatures. That's material. Therefore, if we throw that out, then my identifying with mine. If we say that's material, and you're saying that's good, right? In other words, you're saying identifying as a member of this movement is good. And then the opposition points out, but no, that's also an upadi. And upadis are bad. Therefore, it's an upadi, therefore it's not spiritual, right? Then the upadi that you've complained about in pointing out that they're not identifying and following and doing these things that are traditional, then they'll say, so therefore, since you say that's all right, then what I'm doing is also all right. So they're equal. You understand? In other words, it's an argument simply to break down authority. Because if there's no authority, I can do whatever I feel like. Whatever I say, that's true. Well, the Bhagavatam, then it says that truth means that which is, you can tell the difference between matter and spirit. And here they're not making that distinction, so it's not truth. So the point is you're involved in the Sankirtan mission, that's truth. Now, if you too much identify with the body, that's always going to be a problem. But that the body's engaged in the transcendental, that's a lot better than not. Right? And so then they're going to take it, well, if there's nothingness, then only that's spiritual. Again, we're dealing with impersonalism. You understand? So in other words, all these arguments that are going to come up are going to be basically in one of two categories. Nirvishesh or Shunyavad. So they're either Buddhist or Mayavad. So Buddhist means just on their own they try to establish the facts. And Mayavad, they'll use Vedic verses to establish it. That's the only difference. Right? So then, when you don't accept the Vedic version, but you're willing to use the Vedic verses from the Vedic version to disprove the Vedic version, then now you have a new form of Buddhistic Mayavadis. Who aren't controlling their senses either. So, yeah. Does that make sense? So you have to be careful. These arguments are just to break down Vedic authority. That's their only purpose. You understand? Now, if someone's pointing out that, so that we don't become proud, they're speaking on this point that Krishna's making, if you're doing these things, but you become proud, then you lose the benefit. Then they're pointing out, don't just think, well, I'm a Sankirtan devotee, so I'm the best in the world, I'm better than everybody else, so I'm special. Then yes, that will cause a problem. But it's not that you're not situated spiritually, you just happen to have material consciousness while being situated spiritually. Right? And so the spiritual activity that one's doing, that will give all benefit. But the material consciousness that's being cultivated at the same time, that will give trouble. So you get both, the spiritual and the material at the same time. Mm.
I was thinking with Julie in terms of, somebody may identify strongly with the Muslim tradition, the Christian tradition, and the spiritual activities derived therefrom. But then, as you point out, the material consciousness based on...
Because they're only seeing the externals. Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out that they're only seeing parts of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. It's not so much about being conscious of God, it's about their own particular tradition and all that. Well, for us, the tradition is given by the transcendental persons for elevate yourself to transcendence. So, if that's accepted as, and even you say, oh, but all these also can be on that platform, fine. But then why not accept all of them? Any of them that are bona fide that will elevate one to the platform of love of God, what's the problem then? So then the common discussion is about love of God. Not you do it this way or that way.
So again, it comes down to focus on the secondary versus the...
Yeah, it's all on the secondary instead of the primary.
Thank you.
One should understand that the activities of persons who are proud of their material experience bring only results contradictory to those such persons conceived while awake, sleeping, and deeply sleeping. One should further understand that the spirit soul, although very difficult for the materialist to perceive, is above all these conditions. And by the strength of one's discrimination, one should give up the desire for fruitive results in the present life and in the next. Right? So even you give it up now, but what about next life? Because that's what you see these big karmakandis do. Because they'll be very austere, perform big yajnas and that this life, with no desire for sense gratification in this life. And by doing that, then their ideas they'll get next life. They'll go to the heavenly planets, they'll really enjoy, right? You know, for, you know, if you can put in a little time here and then enjoy, if you could put in, let's say, one lifetime here of 100 years, and from that you'll get 10,000 years, 100,000 years, or like that, that's not a good profit? So just they're smart on the material platform, and so they're doing it. So that's why Krishna says, in this present life and in the next. Right? Thus becoming experienced in transcendental knowledge, one should become my devotee. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:16, 61-62. Kamsavatar continued. You should consider how, by the influence of my illusory energy, these three states of mind, caused by the material modes, by the modes of nature, have been artificially imagined to exist in me. Right? Krishna doesn't have them. He's always conscious. So he doesn't have these three states. Having definitely ascertained the truth of the soul, you should utilize the sharpened sword of knowledge acquired by logical reflection and from the instructions of sages and Vedic literatures to completely cut off the false ego, which is the breeding ground of all doubts. So if there's no false ego, you just see yourself as the sole servant of Krishna. Where do the doubts come up? The doubts come up when I see myself separate from Krishna. Well, I can enjoy. I could be like this. Right? All of you should then worship me, who am situated within the heart. One should see that the material world is a distinct illusion appearing in the mind, because material objects have an extremely flickering existence and are here today and gone tomorrow. They can be compared to the streaking red line creating by whirling a fiery stick. Right? Yeah, because they're here today and gone tomorrow. But it doesn't mean that they don't leave an impression. Like the whirling fiery stick, it's not in the spot where you see the red. Right? But you're still seeing that red. They say. The thin red line. Right? Yes. No? But the problem is that we take it as something of importance, as real. But it's today it's here, tomorrow it's gone. Whatever it is that's important to you, you have today, tomorrow it's gone. It's just that time. So therefore, then the soul, which is eternal, connects to Krishna, which is eternal. So even if we're using this illusion in Krishna's service, then one's getting the transcendental benefit. Okay. The spirit soul by nature exists in the single state of pure consciousness. However, in this world, he appears in many different forms and stages of existence. The modes of nature divide the soul's consciousness into normal, wakefulness, dreaming, and dreamless sleep. Oh, normal wakefulness. Okay. I was thinking, wow, we got a fourth one here. Normal wakefulness. What's the difference between normal and wakefulness? All such varieties of perception, however, are actually maya and exist only like a dream. Because whatever you're perceiving, it's not in connection to Krishna. It is an illusion. It may have a physical existence, but its effect on you is going to be illusion. It's only when you connect something to Krishna does it have a reality. Connected to good qualities, connected to what's socially acceptable, connected to what's profitable, connected to what's practical, all this is illusion. Only when it's connected to Krishna, then it has a meaning. Then if you get all these other good qualities, it gets a good result, you know, this and that, then nice. But the point is its connection to Krishna is the real, benchmark. Everything else is illusion. Yes.
That connection to Krishna, can we break it a little down? Because I might think I'm connected to Krishna, but...
Well, that's why it's, are we conscious of Krishna? Are we in conscious to Krishna, then how we're conscious, is that favorable to Krishna? Right? And is it free from karma and jnana? And I'm doing it without a benefit for myself, you know, on the sensual or the intellectual platform.
Can I imitate that, or can I?
Yeah, of course you can, but that's what the state of manana is for, is to contemplate that. Are you doing that or not? Because who else is supposed to work that out? It means yourself. It means the information is given here, and then we ourselves contemplating this, apply it and see. And then if we see these aspects are pure, that's good. We continue that. We see these aspects are impure, we correct it. We don't get into lamentation, because that's also an illusion, because you're not these things. So, in this regard, Sri Krishna instructs in Bhagavad Gita, a person in the divine consciousness, although engaged in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping, and breathing, always knows within himself that he actually does nothing at all. Because while speaking, evacuating, receiving, or opening or closing his eyes, he always knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he is aloof from them. Right? So the soul is perceiving these things, but the modes of nature are carrying it out, if that's understood. So therefore, you take part in those activities, the modes of nature are going to carry them out, that are connected to Krishna. Then you get that experience that's connected to Krishna. Right? The sense that I'm the doer, that why do we want to be the doer? We want to be the doer because then we can be the enjoyer. How are you the enjoyer unless you're controlling the thing? Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea, is there's no need to feel I'm the doer. I'm simply the instrument. Right? But the instrument may be directly dealing with it. Just like when you're cooking. Does the cook deal directly with the sabji on the fire, or does the spoon? So the instrument's directly dealing, but it's not acting on its own. Right? Does that make sense? We're not talking Harry Potter here. Right? So we're meaning that it is being directed by others. So we serve the spiritual master, serving the parampara, headed by Rupa Goswami, like this. And in this way, then, we're taking part. And the experience and everything will be like that. This knowledge to separate the two is only useful up to the point where you come to the platform of Bhava. After that, this knowledge doesn't have an importance. Right? It means how to separate the body from the soul and this and that. But that I'm servant of the servant of the servant, that remains. But this point is that it's only the modes of nature carrying it out. It's only useful up to the liberation. After that, you just take part in the activities. That's why they're called pastimes. Krishna doesn't have to do anything. Right? But he does things just to interact with the devotees. So that's reality. This idea that I'm here, I'm doing things, I'm being practical, that's not real if it's not connected to Krishna. Does this make sense? Yeah?
Okay.
Contemplate how we're not, because if we're the doer, why doesn't it come out the way we want it? Right? That would be the first thing. If we're the doer, everything would happen the way we think it should happen. But it doesn't. That's the problem. You know, it somehow or another there seems to be another force at work. Right? And so, yeah. So we just contemplate, just as we can see the soul is different from all these things, we contemplate that. And so, what's the advantage of thinking I'm the doer? You get to take credit. So there's a social element, or because I did the work, the result's mine, then you get the profit from it. Of course, we did the work, you got the bad result, we don't want to take the credit for it, you know, socially, or you know, receive the result. So it's very specific how we're trying to use it. So if you just analyze that, it's no, we should be doing to please Krishna. If the result comes out good or not, that we're not worried about. We're worried about pleasing Krishna. So we're doing our best to do that work to please Krishna. So, that's it. Yes.
Maharaj, while we're serving Guru and Krishna, it's like we're an instrument. It's like parampara is working through us.
Yes.
And here, the modes of nature are working through us. Is it similar?
Yes. Means the external actions will look similar, it's just a different potency. It's just whether the internal potency is going through the external.
So there's that difference.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like a... Yeah.
Regarding perception, we might say that we do want to serve Krishna and we think we're serving Krishna, and as much as, you know, it's all question of sincerity. And our perception is, but some people know it, I mean, more advanced. They can see that's just a perception.
Yes, but it's not that everything's not correct. What they're perceiving is something finer. You're perceiving one thing, you know, as one complete unit. And they're seeing breakdowns within that. So let's say this part is Krishna conscious, that part's not. So then it's just a matter of being aware of that and now try to bring that to the same quality as the other part that is Krishna conscious. You know, just like here. One's done the service, done nicely, it's for Krishna and all that. So you can say that's all Krishna conscious. But we're proud of it and want to be recognized for that. That part's not. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, then we try to improve that. It's not that we give up the service. We should give up the pride. Because if we give up the service, then that's also the impersonal concept. Because the service, we take it, the service produces this, so therefore if I don't want pride, then I have to give up the service. Now, if it's very, very strong anartha, then it might be temporarily do some other service that doesn't produce, that you can be effective in and not produce the false ego. And then by doing that, one gets purified, then with time one will be able to go back to the other one, if that's your nature. Because sometimes it's that the one that has the false pride sometimes is the one that's not actually your nature. You're doing that simply because of the social prestige in that. So that's the problem, because the attitude's wrong. No knowledge and skill you have. But Krishna says it's got to be guna and karma. Right? So we're good at the karma, but the guna we don't have. Like that. But if it's that, let's say someone's a manager and they do have the qualities of that, but because of that they become pride by doing some other things, some menial service or other things, they just help out. Then they get purified, they get like this, and then they'll be able to easier go back into it. Does that make sense? Similarly, Kapiladeva instructs, in the dreaming state, one's consciousness is almost covered, and one sees many inauspicious things. But when he is awakened and fully conscious, such inauspicious things cannot bewilder him. 327.25. So here, inauspicious means material. Right? Not when you wake up, then everything will be all the materially auspicious. And all that. Okay, interesting. We got in this one thing all three Gitas. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, after realizing the difference of the Atma from the three states with which it has no relation, one should see the conception of this world to be endowed with an illusory nature arising from the identity of I and mine. One should see it as an object of interest for the mind, manasa vilasam, because by imposing conceptions of I and mine out of illusion. Right? So the mind, this vilas, it likes to play with all these things. That's the mental speculation. And so all this material concept is there's just a play of the mind. Because there's the idea I can enjoy from this. But it doesn't happen. But now if you take it where I see how I'm not these things and I'm servant of Krishna, that can also, with time, as the mind becomes purified, then that will be an interesting point for the mind. Right? So in other words, if we move from karma yoga to jnana yoga, then that becomes a dynamic aspect. But eventually it has to just be bhakti yoga. You know, pure. There can't be any mix. Does that make sense? Like that. Because there's no need for the jnana once you come to the liberated platform. Right? But that actually means literally liberated. Baba Bhakti. Kamsavatar continued. Having understood the temporary illusory nature of material things, and thus having pulled one's vision away from illusion, one should remain without material desires. By experiencing the happiness of the soul, one should give up material speaking and activities. Right? So that means it's not the happy experience, the happiness of the soul. You can either take it as a generic, just being on the spiritual platform, there's the happiness of the soul. But then, as we know, is that we're not interested in liberation. So that means the actual happiness of the soul must be devotional service. Right? But the process is the same. Does that make sense? Getting liberated is one process. But we're doing it with the point of being Krishna conscious. Others do it just because they want to get liberated. So the technique is the same. If sometimes one must observe the material world, one should remember that it is not ultimate reality, and therefore one has given it up. By such constant remembrance up until the time of death, one will not again fall into illusion. So it has to be there constant. Because if it's constant, that's what goes on in the spiritual world. So you have to like constant. Because otherwise, if you don't like constant, you won't like the spiritual world. And so you have to stay here until you do. Right? Because if even you decide to stay here, it still doesn't work out very good. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Because of this, one should withdraw from what is seen and remain silent without hankering. This means that one should exist without operations of the mind or voice. One can do this because of one's realization of happiness. Right? So you don't have to think of sense gratification, you don't have to talk about it, because you're absorbed in the transcendental platform. So that means for us, always thinking about Krishna, his name, form, qualities, and pastime. When one remains without actions of the body, niriha, quote, oh, then one remains without actions of the body, niriha. Then, question, will samsara recur because of inability to withdraw continuously from the state of duality while possessing a body, end quote. Even if one observes the world in necessary daily actions, one will not be bewildered again by what one has given up based on previous mistaken identity. Abhasu bhutya. However, until death of the body, remembrance, the shadow of samsara will remain. You'll remember, like we see Yamunacharya. Remembrance is coming, but there's no, he doesn't act. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. That remembrance will be there. What did you say? A shadow of some sort means just the remembrance of it. But that's also then so you can remember it that it's not nice. How to avoid and everything like that. So makes sense? So Krishna consciousness is newer and newer. And samsara is just a shadow of what it used to be. Right? Doesn't give any happiness anymore. Yes? Hamsavatar continued. Just as a drunken man does not notice if he is wearing his coat or shirt. Similarly, one who is perfect in self-realization and who has thus achieved his eternal identity does not notice whether the temporary body is sitting or standing. Indeed, if by God's will the body is finished, or if by God's will he obtains a new body, a self-realized soul does not notice. He just is Krishna conscious, so he just continues. Because he's absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So it doesn't matter what the external situation, he's going to serve Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. A self-realized soul does not notice, just as a drunken man does not notice the situation of his outer dress. Right? Because he's just absorbed. So if you're absorbed in Krishna, you don't notice. The material body certainly moves under the control of the supreme destiny, and therefore must continue to live along with the senses and the vital air as long as one's karma is in effect. A self-realized soul, however, who is awakened to the absolute reality, and who is thus highly situated in the perfect stage of yoga, will never again surrender to the material body. Right? So highly situated means he's situated there with knowledge. He has the position, but he also has the proper understanding and attitude. So all that goes together. He will never again surrender to the material body and its manifold manifestations, knowing it to be just like a body visualized in a dream. Right? It doesn't have any more substance than what goes on in the dream. Right? If the dream is connected about Krishna, you're always dreaming about Krishna, then you won't have any problem. You'll understand what they're talking about. Right? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, as long as one has karmas to be experienced, even the liberated person will continue living while observing his experience of karma. Quote, will he sometimes become attached again? End quote. No. He does not enjoy the body with senses, sense objects, and material enjoyment. He's like a person who has woken up and does not experience the dream body again. So even though he's within the body, he's awake. Right? He's not asleep. So therefore he doesn't go on in this dream state of illusion. He actually sees. So even though it's there and all the things memories be there, but it's not interesting. Right? Like we said. As a small child, you may remember picking things up and sticking in your mouth, whatever happens to be around. But that doesn't mean that now, just because you remember it, you want to do it. Right? Because now, you know, you matured. It's not interesting. So in the same way, it's whatever's there on the material platform. It's not interesting. Why is it not interesting? Because it's not connected to Krishna. It's not connected to Krishna. It doesn't actually give transcendental enjoyment. It only gives the so-called seemingly material enjoyment. And what's that material enjoyment? It's what you think it is. Right? Literally. Yes.
That means that at this stage, the spiritual body is fully developed.
Yeah, I mean, the spiritual body is always there, but our let's say, identity with it in that is there. You know, you can say on that planet, it's Swarup.
Yeah.
But we're not Swarup Siddhi. Right? So Haji has moved Swarup Siddhi from Apandas right down, you know, to Shravandas. You just hear about it, and then therefore now we have it. You know, just like we talk about a million, you know, it's like we have a seminar on making big money, and then the people who, you know, come to it are very satisfied. They've heard, now they think they're going to have, they have the money. But, you know, that's, yeah. Does that make sense? So that may be there, but the principle is it doesn't affect, because you're identifying with serving Krishna. So then you're just serving Krishna, so you're not aware of the body. Like when you become very absorbed in stuff, you're not aware of the body. It's there. Like let's say you have a nice kirtan. You're absorbed in the kirtan. You don't notice the body. But the body's being engaged in singing or dancing or playing musical instruments. But it's not that's where the awareness is, because as soon as the awareness is there, you're not thinking of Krishna. Does that make sense? You know. So that's the whole point. So it says, those who focus too much on the externals of it, how well it's done and everything like that, and that's what makes it excellent, then it doesn't have the same spiritual effect as those who are just absorbed in the name. Does that make sense? You know, like you have professional kirtaneers. They're very good singers and mridanga players and that. I mean, the higher up you go. Most of the ones we hear, those are the, you know, they bring in, they're not so expensive. But the top guys, you pay serious money for them. So you won't see them at these kind of programs. But sometimes you go to a very rich man's house, he's doing one of these programs, you'll see those guys. They're super, super sophisticated, super, you know, good at what they do. But still, even though it's so technically good, it's still material, because it's not about, really about Krishna. You know, so.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.